Before I get started today, I wanted to make sure that I gave a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind-body coach based in Los Angeles. She spent 16-plus years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and many other TMS symptoms that left her physically and mentally depleted. After healing herself completely, Jeannie is now obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program, which includes weekly support, consistency, and accountability. Perhaps you've done years of therapy, or perhaps you've been working on your childhood or past traumas and now want a different approach. Maybe it's time for action and a results-driven approach. Instead, one that specifically focuses on TMS and mind-body healing. Working with Jeannie, in itself, lowers stress because she'll take the overwhelm out of a mountain of TMS info and customize a simple game plan that works best for you and your current lifestyle. How supportive would it feel to have someone in your corner with the experience, results, and confidence to believe in you and your healing? I understand it can be scary to reach out for support, but I've known Jeannie for years, and her clients are achieving much more than reducing their TMS symptoms. She's a coach dedicated to thriving in areas of your life, not just for your health. Even if you're nervous or stuck in overthinking, I'd recommend booking a free 45-minute call. It'll be well worth your time. She'll make you feel comfortable, and she's fun to work with. If you're not getting the results you crave, it's time to step it up. Go to her website, book your free 45-minute call today at jeanniecolwin.com. That's JeannieKulwin.com to learn more. Welcome back to the show. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. Let me make sure that I give a shout out to all the patrons of the podcast. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast to throw a few bucks in the tip jar. So let me start out with giving a big shout out to Teresa and Lauren and Albert, Jeff, Julie, Deborah, Daniel, Kirk, Emily, Elise, Enda, Dominic, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Mike, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Sarah, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast every single week, month, year. Honestly, means the world. All right. So as I mentioned at this juncture, I'm traveling. So this is part two of the interview with Lisa Schlossberg that we started last week. And again, if you're interested in working with her in this 14-week coaching experience, sign up by Friday the 12th, this coming Friday, and go to outofthecave.health to learn more about that. Here is Lisa and I with part two. So I mentioned that the podcast that you put out this week, which is The Mind's Role in Sustainable Weight Loss with, how do you pronounce it? Is it Morad?
Morad, yeah.
So it was lovely. And ironically, I was actually listening to this while I was working out. That's what I chose to listen to while I was lifting yesterday, which is like, cool. I told Nicole Sachs once that, hey, when I'm doing like my max out weeks, I'm listening to you doing an interview on childhood trauma. Like it's just like sometimes, like depending on the workout, I'll listen to, you know, something that's a little like, usually like 90s hip hop is kind of what fills my brain most of the time, especially West Coast hip hop, which you're yeah, exactly.
Rock on.
it's always pretty much going to be Tupac and Snoop and Dre and Eminem's Detroit, but he's still a part of that, of the family. But you had this term that you were using a lot during that interview, which was white knuckling your way through weight loss.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about kind of my own path in the last less than 6 months. It's like five months plus a few days that I had gotten to a weight that I wasn't all that comfortable with, meaning just in terms of how I felt. Like I tell you, I coached girls soccer, and one thing that's very involved is like being able to run up and down field during drills, and that was a little bit more tiring than I kind of wanted it to be. And when I came onto your show several months ago, I talked about how I lost 100 pounds as a teenager, and I'd gotten all the way up to about 235 or so pounds, and then got down to the 130s. And even in the mid to late 20s of my life, where most of the time I hovered around 150 pounds, that still kind of felt a little lighter than I would want. Where I seem to feel physically most optimal is around 160 to 170. So I got into 187, and just, you know, wasn't feeling all that great. So I've kind of been on this quest to lose, get to 170 was where I wanted to be. I don't need to be at 150 where I was at in my 20s. 170 allows me to kind of keep good size and be able to still lift weights, and but also have more of an engine to do things like a spur of the moment 10K on this Friday. And there is a certain threshold. I'm not a fan. I'd expressed to you in that episode we did my distaste for tracking macros and weighing things and stuff like that, which sort of is like an unfortunate to me, like at least with what I want to do right now, almost a necessity, and mainly because there's a lot of mindless snacking that kind of just happens throughout the day if I'm not. And so what I have noticed and what you were saying on that podcast yesterday that was resonating so much with me was the white knuckling comment, because there's almost like a certain amount of calorie threshold where if I go below this, I really like I'm really white knuckling. Like I feel like a jerk and I'm not performing well and I'm irritable and I'm way hungry. And then ultimately it's a binge fest. So getting down into even the teens of calories is not tend to be good for me. So 2150 for calories in a day seems to be about the magic spot. That's where I've been able to maintain somewhere between a half a pound to a pound and a half every week. And now like I weigh in every Thursday, and so tomorrow I should be at 170 or like 170 and change. And then I'll go back to maintenance, which is around 26 or 2700 most days. I guess, do you have any commentary, and be as uncensored as you want, on that? The other thing that I stopped doing, and I think we even talked about this then too, was that I had stopped drinking. I actually stopped drinking entirely in August. I had sustained a concussion on a motorcycle accident. And one of the things that the doctor had said was like, do everything you can do. I went and saw him 2 days after. I felt like cognitively I was not well. I felt fine. You know, light didn't hurt, all that kind of stuff. But I hit my head very hard on a rock during the wipeout. And I was talking to a client of mine and they were just explaining this thing about the software system that we use. And I just couldn't answer the question. Like I just felt really cloudy. That's where I went to urgent care. And CT scan came back fine and all that kind of stuff. But he had said, do everything you can to recover as well as you can. Mm-hmm. And so I had quit drinking entirely. He said, you could have post-concussion syndrome up to about 5 weeks after this concussion. So I was like, okay, I can do that for 5 weeks. I don't have to have my Wednesday Moscow mule. I'm good. And week five, I get COVID. And so then I'm like, okay, well, now I really need to dedicate all I can to doing whatever I can to be healthy and recover as well as I can, sleep as well as I can. And then I just never picked it up after that. So the combination of being at this 2150 calorie number and then not drinking alcohol has made the weight come off, but a really slow kind of methodical way. You hear a guy tell you that or hear a new person tell you that. What floats in your brain, if anything? And it might be nothing, but I would love your comment because honestly, anytime I do, this hopefully doesn't sound weird. Anytime I do anything in relating to like nutrition or training, you are the first person I think of. Because I think that you have such unique talents in this arena that I, what would Lisa think? So hopefully it's flattering and not weird.
It's totally flattering and I appreciate that a lot. I receive that. Yeah, no. So there's never any time I could hear something like this and not have thoughts floating through my brain. Yeah. Most of the time it's like I have 100 million thoughts floating through my brain. So what I will tell you is something that okay, so this will go back to like my experience training, right? Because I'm going to really try to articulate this in a way that makes sense. This might be the first time I'm trying to put words to it. Okay. So I'm always taking into account what's going on in the brain, right? And this can we'll kind of explore more of this, but we have an animal brain, right? The animal brain's always trying to keep you safe. And so when we are framing our experience as I have to do this, I have to do this, or I need to do this, it's like we're telling the brain that we don't have choice. We don't have power. We don't have freedom. And what that means to the brain is that we're not safe. We have to do this. And if we don't, we're unsafe and we might be in danger, or we are in danger ultimately. Yep. So the reason I'm saying that is because when it comes to like food and eating and like counting your macros or like tracking your portions or whatever it is, when we're in a place of saying, this is something I must do, just kind of as a blanket statement, like in a vacuum, the brain is like, oh, okay, this is what we have to do. And then it can start feeling like you're white knuckling it and that you're like unsafe and you're like forcing yourself to do something. But I think energetically, we can really shift that by acknowledging it's not something that you have to do. It's something that you are choosing to do because you want a specific outcome.
Yeah.
Right. And so now we're talking about something Nicole Sachs says all the time. Life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse. Right. So when I think about like the way that I was training, right, there were so many days that it was like what I quote unquote have to do is run 5 miles today. And I really don't feel like doing that. And I don't want to do that. And if I'm telling myself over and over again, but I have to, but I have to, but I have to, that to me energetically feels like now I'm starting to fight myself. Right. It's like one part of me is like, you have to do the thing. The other part of me is like, but I don't want to. And then it becomes this whole internal kind of conflict. And again, you just feel like the contraction around that. And this comes up around food and eating all the time. But what I would do in that space is notice that now I'm fighting against myself. But if I just like zoom out for a second, the truth is I don't have to run 5 miles today.
Yeah.
I'm choosing to run 5 miles today because I want to make this relay race that I signed up for a little bit easier for myself, right? It's like, I'm choosing this because I can choose to either run 5 miles today and make it easier for myself in the long run or not run 5 miles today. And then I'm not on my training schedule and then I'm going to end up paying for that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I don't have to do anything. It's not that I must show up a certain way. It's that I'm choosing to operate this way and kind of force myself to do something uncomfortable now for the delayed gratification of having done it later. But I think about this too, because this came up for me recently around food and eating, where recently, I mean, it was my birthday. I also had COVID. It was like all these different things. My mom came to visit. Probably the last month was like a lot of food, a lot of dessert, a lot of sugar, alcohol, like all the things, right? So I'm not surprised that I've put on a few pounds. I don't get on the scale, but like I put the jeans on my body. Like I know, right? Yeah. And so I was thinking about the other day, one of my friends was like, he was like downtown. He was like, I can come drop off dessert if you want me to. And I had this thought where I was like, I'm choosing to be like, I don't want that, right? I don't want to put more of that in my body right now because I know where I'm at.
Yep.
But then there was this whole like emotional reaction of like, now I feel like I'm on a diet and I feel like I'm restricted and I'm like doing that thing again. And then I just had to, again, be aware that it's like, you can eat all the dessert. You can drink all, you can do whatever you choose to do. You have all the permission and the freedom in the world, but I want to think long-term.
Yeah.
And so all I'm doing is saying I'm choosing to not have this thing because I want to be mindful about how that's going to affect me. And I'm opting to say, I don't want that in the long run. I don't want the side effect or the consequence of this. So I'm choosing not to have it. And for me, that's kind of how I look at something like that. And I don't feel like I'm white knuckling it.
Yeah.
I feel like it kind of sucks that I can't eat all the dessert in the world and have it not affect me. Yeah. That's what I'm, you know, but that's where we talk about kind of the grieving, the loss of option three, right? What hurts worse. And then option three is like, you could do whatever you want and there are no consequences at all.
Yeah.
And I think very often that gets lost in our relationship with food, where if we're choosing to say no to something, what I've noticed in myself is that I have this emotional reaction of I'm feeling restricted, but that's not because of food and eating. That's because I can't have everything I want the way that I want it and not have it affect me later.
Yeah.
And that has, again, that's an emotional psychological reaction that has nothing to do with the food. We could talk about the same as like, you know, I want to go out and drink tonight, but I don't want to be hungover tomorrow. Yeah. I want to stay up all night and then not have to sleep tomorrow. It's like, that's just not the way that it works. So does what I'm saying make sense?
It was, well, yeah, no, it really does. The other thing that would float across my brain as I was, as I've been in the midst of this is saying that not necessarily if I don't do that, or the antithesis of this is what's going to drive the consequence of not sleeping as well or not having as much endurance or like whatever that consequence could be. But more so saying I'm doing this because like I deserve better.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I've put it to myself. Is I deserve better. And that's, yeah, I absolutely agree with what you say.
I appreciate that. And yes, 100%. I mean, that's kind of how, that's how I think about all of it is like, it's something that's come through my mind recently, again, in my own experience is this what I want for myself or is this what I want right now? And those are two very different things. Like what I want for myself is self-care, mm-hmm. right? I want to put myself to sleep at night, even though I don't feel like it. Yeah. I want to, you know, fuel myself with like the right food, quote unquote, and all of those things. But that's what I want for myself. What I want right now is to be like, all, you know, I can do whatever I want, and then just like have the inner child kind of make the decisions.
Yep.
But it's about just having that like moment of mindfulness around like, what do I actually want for myself? And the same energy is exactly that. It's like, I deserve more. I'm worthy of more. I can give myself more than just this immediate gratification that's going to like end up kind of coming back to me later.
Yep.
Yep. 100%.
You had said, we were DMing back and forth. You had this sentence that I highlighted and circled, and it really resonated with me. And I want you to expand a little bit more on it. So let me say this. You're a spiritual being having a physical experience with an animal brain in a social context.
Yeah.
All right, peel back the layers. I was going to say, we've got 15 or 20 minutes to go, and there's a couple mm-hmm. other things I want to talk about, but I want to dive into a little bit deeper, because all of those, there are four very true statements within the confines of one sentence, which is, it just in the English language, is not, that's not a very common thing, so...
I appreciate that. So yeah. So part of the reason this is something, you know, you're like, what have you been like sitting with or working on or whatever? And this is something that just keeps coming up for me, because again, I think especially in this community, the people that are listening to this, you've probably heard before that you are a spiritual being having a physical experience. Like that's something, you know, I think we're collectively somewhat more and more comfortable with, is like, you know, you can come at that from a really spiritual kind of side or perspective of being a spiritual being. But you could also look at that just like, you know, I always like to kind of shout out the people like myself years ago who are very like, I don't really identify or resonate with spirituality, but I like science, right? And no matter how you come at it, the fact that you're a spiritual being is that we are a system of energy ultimately, right? And so energy is moving through our body. The nervous system is literally a system of electricity sending signals from the brain to the body, right? So however you want to look at that or resonate with that, we are a system of energy, which is what I mean when I say you're a spiritual being. You are more than just what you can see or track or touch, or, you know, we're more than that. We're more than the body. So we're a spiritual being. And we're having a physical experience, so we can see our bodies. We are in our bodies. Our body is our home, our vessel, the vehicle that allows us to live this life. And so, again, these are things that we're mostly familiar with already. But having kind of shared that at retreats and taught that in my program for a couple of years, I got to a point where I was like, okay, but it's so much more than that. It's so much more complicated than that. And the reason that we're, you know, struggling in a lot of areas is not just because we're a spiritual being having a physical experience and trying to navigate that, but it's complicated and it's emotional and it feels so charged and heavy and scary sometimes because we have an animal brain. And it's like, we need to be talking about that added layer of complexity so we understand what just what's going on here. Sometimes when I talk about, like, you know, we could share a little bit about my group program, but when I talk about it with people who are interested, and I say, I compare it to like a driver's ed course, where it's like, we were all born basically driving the car of the mind, body, soul being, but we never read the manual. Like, we don't know how it operates. We were never taught how the brain body system works. Many of us learn that through experiences with TMS or chronic pain or things like that. But this isn't like common knowledge. So we have an animal brain. What does that mean for us? Well, the animal brain is only concerned, like we said earlier, with keeping you alive, making sure that you're safe, and making sure that you're surviving. It's not concerned with, it doesn't even know about how happy you are, how cool you are, how successful you are, what you look like, right? It's all it knows is, are you safe or are you in danger? And so what that means is every thought, feeling, experience, relationship, everything is basically filtered into safety or danger. And the reason that we need to know that and incorporate that into our understanding of ourselves and our human experience is because the animal brain doesn't know the difference between stressors. All cortisol is cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So your brain doesn't know the difference between, I always use the example of like a lion chasing after you and like you sitting in traffic running late on your way to work, mm-hmm. right? Which is why we start preparing physiologically to fight or flight even though there is no actual threat. Now it's a perceived threat. And so just understanding kind of that that's always playing out in the background, whether we're conscious of it, whether we know it or not. But this will speak to why some of us struggle with things like chronic pain, is like we're in this fight or flight and we're not even aware of it because we have an animal brain. But then the added layer that I think especially around food and eating and specifically body image is really important is that we live in a social context. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, really early on in our life, 0 to 5, 0 to 7, right? We're just kind of absorbing these ideas about what is right and wrong and good and bad and how to be a human, right? So we're taking in all these messages, and thank God for that, because that's how we, again, learn how to function. We learn to look both ways before we cross the street without even thinking about it, yep, because it just got lodged in our brain as something to do. But the reason I say that is because now if we think about what does that mean in terms of body image and the beauty ideal, well, what it means is that from a really early age, before we had the capacity to critically think about or question or challenge what we're learning that if you look a certain way, you are acceptable. And if you look a certain way, you are unacceptable. And if you're in a certain body, you're acceptable to the society. And if you're in a different body, then you're unacceptable. But the reason this is important to pair with the understanding that we have an animal brain is because what that means and the way that we interpret that is that if you look a certain way, you are safe. And if you look a certain way, you are in danger. And if you weigh a certain thing, you are safe. And if you weigh a certain thing, you're in danger. And we're taking these messages, and that's the thing that we need to now draw the awareness to and be conscious of, is that that's not actually true. A different weight might make you uncomfortable,
yeah,
but it's not going to make you unsafe,
yep,
right? And that's the thing that is just so important about understanding our relationship with food and eating and our bodies and body image and the culture and the socialization process that we've all gone through, is we're a spiritual being. We're having a physical experience, but we have an animal brain within a social context, which is why it can feel like our relationship with our body or what you see in the mirror can feel like it's life or death, even though there's a part of you logically that knows that that's not true. That's why it's really valid that that's the experience a lot of us have.
So is like an anecdote to that, excuse me, is it just like a constant reminder to yourself that all those things are occurring and they are true? Or like what's your advice on that as a solution?
That's a good question. So it's funny because I would say yes and no. What I find helpful and supportive is that we want to remember that. Okay. So the first thing, you know, I think the reason that people like read Sarno's book and have that like miracle recovery is because now there's some understanding that things are working properly. Right. And there's just this like almost immediate release of shame and fear. And that's kind of the invitation with a lot of this, is to just simply absorb the awareness of it, to know that if you're in a place where you're struggling with something like body image and it feels like it's life or death, and when you look in the mirror and maybe you gain 2 pounds, it feels like you're going to literally die and you can't think about anything else. For most of us, what that's met with, the same way that we meet our symptoms of chronic pain with fear, what that's met with for a lot of us is judgment and shame and fear and control and all just like the fear-based response. And so the first thing is to understand it makes all the sense in the world. And it's actually totally valid. And if that's your experience, to know that everything is operating as it should, the same way that your back pain, right, might not be comfortable, but at least we can look at that and say, something's actually right here, not wrong here. So that's the first thing, is that's what we do with it, is we be aware of it. And what that means and translates to most of the time is you don't have to beat yourself up for it. You can know it's not your fault. Everything is as it should be. Okay. So just like exhaling into that, really allowing the body to receive that and sit with that. But then the other part of what you said, you know, reminding yourself that it's true. We want to remind ourselves that all of what I'm saying about this in terms of being a spiritual being in a physical experience with an animal brain in a social context is true. But where we have a lot of power is also knowing that our thoughts and our feelings are not reflective necessarily of reality. And so what I mean by that is your feelings are valid and your thoughts are present, but they are not always reflecting reality. Meaning, again, if you have an experience where you gain 5 pounds and you feel like you're going to literally die, the thing to do there is to come back to the knowing and the truth. This is just the truth. That is, you are not unsafe. You are uncomfortable, right? And that's where we can say, okay, well, I don't love that I'm having this experience, but at least I'm not going to fall into the distraction of believing that it's life or death and that I need to, like, you know, claw my way out of it. Again, back to like white knuckling it. And then we start fighting ourselves and trying to control our bodies, which ultimately just adds more fuel to the fire and then exacerbates a fight or flight response. So it's the awareness that this is true, the releasing the any shame or judgment or fear around this being true, and then coming back to, yeah, like it's really hard to be a human being because there's all these different components. Yeah. And specifically around our body and our body image, it can bring up a lot. And so what I'm saying is have your thoughts about it. Know that your thoughts are not necessarily true or facts. They are, you know, the early conditioning that we all received in this culture. Have your feelings because they are safe and they are valid and they are okay. And I think the more, and what I've experienced is that the more we can bring safety into, I can think these thoughts. They don't mean anything about me. I don't have to judge them or fear them. I can feel these feelings. They don't mean anything about me. I don't have to judge or fear them. The more we're actually bringing that safety into the internal environment, and we're actually moving in the opposite direction of exacerbating that fight or flight by saying, okay, I'm a human being. This is my experience. This is my authentic truth. And I have the capacity to tolerate it, even if I don't like it all the time.
It's making me think of two things. We started this interview a few minutes late because my daughter, I took her to get a strep test done. And Zoe goes like 0 to 60 on things in an amazing amount of time. And that differential, which is very tough to explain. I don't know how to explain it to her, but that intersection of it's uncomfortable or it's unsafe. Like,
yeah.
Even if it's uncomfortable doesn't necessarily mean that you're unsafe. So like an example was with the strep test today, like, nurse comes in to like put the thing in her throat to test it. And Zoe literally smacks the nurse away, like slaps her arm away. And then I'm holding her arms and pinning her. And Zoe's she's not a physical kid. She's not hurting people. She's not getting in fights. She doesn't hit. Like, that's not her thing. It was just this reflex. And like, she is screaming bloody murder as if she is unsafe when really it's that she's uncomfortable. And right. So we sort of had kind of a talk similar to what you're saying on the way home. I don't know how much she grasped it, but basically it was like, I was at a point where I had to hold her completely with her arms, pin her, and then tilt her head so that the nurse could get both tonsils. And trying to explain to her that, look, like, Zoe, you weren't going to be hurt in that moment. It was uncomfortable and it sucks. And I know. But like, the nurse wasn't going to hurt you. That wasn't an unsafe moment. But I know that it sucked. And it sounds a lot like what you're talking about. And actually, a quote you said, so you had said back pain means something is working correctly. Like, it sucks in the moment, but it means that something is working. And it's totally unrelated, but my favorite, and it's a Southern California-esque movie, but my second favorite movie ever is Point Break, the original one, with Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze and all that. There's this moment in the movie where Gary Busey is pissed, and have you seen this movie?
No.
You should really check it out. It takes place that there's scenes of Mulholland Drive. It's Los Angeles. I know you're not Orange County, but like, it's close enough. They're FBI partners, Keanu Reeves and Gary Busey. Busey is just pissed. Like, he's livid about not being able to capture these criminals that they've been working on. And the quote, and I was writing it down as you were saying it, Keanu Reeves says, "Are you mad?" And he said, "It feels good, doesn't it, to be mad?" And Busey was so confused. And he goes, "Because it means you're alive. And the fact that you're mad means that you're alive. And since you're not dead and you're not in the box," meaning the coffin, "just yet, why don't we go get these guys?" Meaning the bad guys. And so that's one thought that was running through my mind. It's like, yeah, like, feeling sucks, and being a human being in a social context with an animal brain and all this stuff. Yes, like, feelings and feeling hurt and having pain and all those things. Yes, they are shitty. Now I have to hit the explicit box when I publish this. They feel shitty, but it means that something's working. And yes. It sounds like that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also just want to clarify, because I think this is an important point, is that when you're in that moment, because anything can, I think we talked about this in the last podcast we did, but like, anything that we do or say or think, we can be doing from a place of love or fear, mm-hmm. right? So this is something that, like, you could use this and beat yourself up with it being like, you know, you're not unsafe. You're just uncomfortable. Like, get over it. You know, like you could do that. Or, but it's the intention in saying it is literally for your conscious input to be aware. And so what I mean by that is you can have a moment with yourself where you're validating the emotional experience of saying, I know that you feel unsafe and that's valid. I'm here to just remind you that you're not actually going to die. And you, it's okay if you feel like you are and it feels really scary and it feels that charged and it feels that scary. It's just the awareness that you have the capacity to tolerate that feeling. Because what happens is when we believe, that's the thing, when we believe that we are actually unsafe, like, no, I'm going to die here. I'm going to die here. I'm going to die here. When that's our conscious input, well, we're going to do exactly what we're designed to do, which is get out of it. We're going to numb it, avoid it, distract it, whatever it is. But so what I'm saying is you're allowed to say, I feel like I'm unsafe, even though I know that I'm not. And just that knowing that you're not actually going to die means you can hang out here in this discomfort for a little bit because it's not actually a saber-tooth tiger,
yep.
Right? And I think about the example of, it's funny, it was at the Omega Institute last year when I was teaching with Nicole and I just caught it, you know, like you watch these things happen. Like I was in this moment where we had a bathroom break. And like, you know, so all of the women are like flooding the bathroom,
yep.
And I'm walking into the bathroom and I'm like, oh my, and I heard myself say this, I have to pee so bad, I'm going to literally die. Okay. And so what I'm saying is we immediately go there. We immediately go yep. there. It's like, I'm so uncomfortable. Oh my God, I'm going to die. And then I like giggle to myself. Cause I'm like, you're not going to die. You're just really struggling for yeah. like another minute.
Yeah.
But that's the invitation, is to notice and be aware of your conscious input. Because if I'm not conscious of that, I'm going to stay sending the message to my mind, body, system. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Yep. When really I just need to wait 30 more seconds and someone's going to come out of the bathroom and I'm going to be fine. And so it's in that moment of being like, I know that you feel that way. And also just keep breathing. You're just uncomfortable. Like, I'm here. This is safe. And then again, it's more about the awareness of it. And again, allowing yourself to have the emotions that come up, even though, you know, you can be in a place of, I know I'm not going to die, but I feel like I am. And that's valid too.
Ironically, this story is in San Diego, but it's a funny story in our family. It wasn't funny at the time. Funny story in our family, bathroom story, just like that. We were in San Diego on a family vacation in 2018. We went to Legoland. It was 2018 or 2019. And we're all down there and I'm driving and we need to get back to the Airbnb because I have to pee. Like, I have to pee. And the traffic is bad. There's nowhere to pull over. We're so far away from the house. And like, I'm, you know, you're in the car and I'm like moving back and forth. And I'm like, just trying to just get my body in a position where maybe I'll feel like I have to pee less than I did 5 seconds ago. And just had this really serious moment where I turn to my wife and I go, if I pee in this car seat, are you going to judge me? Can I do it? Like, is that okay? Like, and that's what it reminds me, because I did. I felt like I was going to die. And then event just kept breathing into it and breathing into it. And eventually we made it back. That was over by, I even took a picture of it. I feel like it was, San Diego is probably one of those cities where like everybody thinks that everybody knows each other and we all forget how big the town actually is. But we were staying near, I think it was actually called Dusty Roads Park, near a beach or something like that. But yeah, nevertheless, it was in San Diego and that's odd. So pivoting, yeah. I had, again, I'm not going to say who it was because confidentiality, I don't want to give that up. There was somebody that participated in, it was either a group coaching program that you did fairly recently, or at least in the last few months, that I had on a couple of months ago. She raved about you, and you're working on something coming up that, as this is airing, which is May the 4th, is coming up in 12 days. So like, tell us about what you're working on and what's coming up.
Yeah, thank you. So my next group program is going to start in a couple weeks. And the group program, it's a 14-week coaching experience. And there's two calls a week. And ultimately, the entire thing is designed to, it's supporting anyone who is struggling with any kind of quote unquote disordered eating. I say quote unquote because we understand it's not a disorder. It's a really valid way of coping with stress, managing emotion, regulating energy in the body. And so a lot of us find ourselves with overeating, undereating, picky eat, mindless eating, emotional eating, all the different kinds of things that come up in our relationship with food. And so this program is for anyone who's struggling in any kind of area around their relationship with food and or body image, because that also works the same way. And so the curriculum is designed, the way I explain it is like the first third of the program is about answering the question, how did we get here? Like, you are a human being, you survive on food. If that feels like a struggle, if, you know, intuitive eating is something that you want to access, but it feels impossible, the first part is, how did you get here? Like, why is it that there is such a struggle around this? And that's looking at, again, how the mind-body system works, the neurobiology of emotional eating, what happens in our brain when we're eating food, what does it mean to live in this culture and, you know, internalize a lot of the messaging around our bodies. The second part of the program is answering the question, how do we get out? If what we're doing right now isn't really working for us, what does it mean to come back into our bodies, ultimately get our needs met, and learn how to listen to our body around food and eating? And then the last part of the program is, how do we sustain it? How do we maintain it? And how do we ultimately build a lifestyle that is supportive to feeling safe in our body, getting our needs met, and living the fruitful and fulfilling life that we actually can live when we're not preoccupied with our bodies, our weight, our shape, our size. It's ultimately about just taking your power back. You know, if you're one of those people who resonates with food and eating is, you know, 90%, 95% of what you think about every day. There's a lot of ways that we can support you in just reclaiming your life ultimately. So that's the program. It will start on May 16th. So that's the invitation. There are a few spots left, and it is a really incredible and transformative experience.
Where do people go to sign up?
My website. The website is outofthecave.health. You will see a page that says work with me. You can fill out the application there, or I'm happy to, if anyone's listening to this and is like me, that's me, I want to just email you directly. My email is lisaschlossberg@gmail.com. I can spell that, or we can put that in the notes or something.
I'll put it in the notes, but it's S-C-H-L-O-S-B-E-R-G.
Yes, you're so good.
Yeah. As somebody whose name is commonly mispronounced and misspelled, I feel for you. But yeah, Schlossberg's not that hard. Put the C there, then it's easier. I will tell you, this is my own personal pitch again. I'm not like, I don't say this about every guest, but Lisa truly is special. There's a reason, like, Nicole Sachs is sort of she's like the fairy godmother of this kind of like mind body work in the world right now. And she has Lisa out to Omega for her annual, it's not a convention. What do we call it?
Retreat. Like,
retreat that she does. It's her huge one that she does in New York, I think. And Lisa's always invited and is you're a teacher, a facilitator. What's your role when you go out there?
Both.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, outofthecave.health. is where you can check that out. I'll link it in the show notes too. Don't hang up, but we're going to sort of fake end the interview now, but I don't want you to hang up after I say goodbye. Anything else that you want to add? Feels like we got through a lot in an hour and 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, I think that feels complete. But also, if it's on anyone's radar, if they're interested, the Omega Retreat with Nicole Sachs is coming up at the end of June, so next month. And that will be, again, in upstate New York. It's a beautiful opportunity to just come work with us in person. So now that you mention it, you know, that's also on the radar and coming up pretty soon.
Lisa, thanks for being here.
Thank you.